who would know if she had, changed. And what makes you think that I would have the knowledge you seek? Because I saw you preparing the battlefield at the stone table years ago. Your Mab's equal. I saw your power. You don't get power like that without knowledge.
That is true. I need to know, I said. Is Mab sane? Is she still Mab?
Titania did a statue impersonation for a long moment. Then she turned her head to one side and stared out toward the lake.
I do not know.
She gave me an oblique look.
I have not exchanged words with my sister since before Hastings.
The next best thing to a millennium's worth of estrangement. Dysfunction on an epic scale. This was exactly the kind of family tension into which sane people do not inject themselves. I'm going to inject myself into your family business, I said, because I'm scared to death of what could happen if I don't, and because it needs to be done. I understand that you're Mab's enemy. I understand that if she says black, you say white, and that's the way it is. But we're all in the southbound handbasket together here, and I need your help.
Titania tilted her head the other way and took a step toward me.
I almost flinched back out of the circle. I did not want to do that. I didn't think it would keep me safe for long if she decided she wanted to come at me, but as long as it was there, it meant that she would have to spend at least a little time bringing it down. Time in which I could attack her. It also meant that if I took the first swing, I'd be sacrificing the circle's protection and my only current advantage. She looked down at my feet and then back up at me, expectantly. I said, will you please help me? Something flickered over her face when I said that, an emotion that I couldn't place. Maybe it wasn't a human one. She turned abruptly away and seemed to consider her surroundings for the first time.
We shall see, she said.
She turned back to me, her eyes intent.
Why did you come here for the summoning?
It's a bird sanctuary, I said. A natural place intended to preserve life and beauty. And birds seem kind of summery to me. Following summer to the south over the winter and then returning, I thought that it might be close to some of summer's lands in Faerie, that you'd have an easier time hearing me. She turned her head slowly, as if listening. There was no sound but the constant, muffled, white noise of thousands of wings beating.
But this place is more than that. It is a location for unapproved liaisons.
I shrugged. It's just you and me. I figured if you wanted to kill me, you could do it here without hurting anybody else. Titania nodded, her expression turning thoughtful.
What think you of the men who come here to meet with one another?
I said, feeling somewhat off balance. What do I think of gay guys?
Yes.
Boink and let boink, more or less.
Meaning?
Meaning it doesn't have a lot to do with me, I said. It's none of my business what they do. I don't go over in their living room and get my freak on with women. They don't come over and do whatever they do with other guys at my house.
You don't feel that they are morally wrong to do so?
I have no idea if it's right or wrong, I said. To me, it mostly doesn't matter.
And why not?
Because, even if they are doing something immoral, I'd be an idiot to start criticizing them for it if I wasn't perfect myself. Smoking is self-destructive. Drinking is self-destructive. Losing your temper and yelling at people is wrong. Lying is wrong. Cheating is wrong. Stealing is wrong. But people do that stuff all the time. Soon as I figure out how to be a perfect human being, then I'm qualified to go lecture other people about how they live their lives.
An odd sentiment. Are you not only human? Will you not always be imperfect?
Now you're catching on, I said.
You do not see it as a sin?
I shrugged. I think it's a cruel world. I think it's hard to find love. I think we should all be happy when someone manages to do it.
Love, Titania said. She had keyed on the word. Is that what happens here?
The guys who come here for anonymous sex? I sighed. Not so much. I think that part's a little sad. I mean, any time sex becomes something so damned impersonal, it's a shame. And I don't think it's good for them, but it's not me they're hurting.
Why should that matter?
I just looked at Tanya for a second. Then I said, Because people should be free. And as long as something they want to do isn't harming others, they should be free to do it, obviously.
Is it? Titania asked.
It would not seem to be, judging from the state of the mortal world. Yeah, a lot of people don't get that, I said. They get caught up in right and wrong, or right and left, but none of that stuff matters if people aren't free.
Titania studied me intently. Why are you asking me about that, of all things? I asked. Because it felt appropriate. Because my instincts told me that your answers would tell me something about you that I needed to know. Titania took a deep breath. What think you of my sister?
I debated for a second. Polite answer or honest one? Honest. It's almost always best to go with honest. It means you never have to worry about getting your story straight. I thought Mab's wrath was pretty bad until I found out what her affection was like.
At that, I think Titania almost smiled. Oh?
She nursed me out of bed by trying to kill me every day for 11 weeks. She scares the hell out of me.
You do not love her?
Not by any definition of the word I've ever heard, I said.
And why do you serve her?
Needed her help, I said. That was her price. Sure as hell wasn't because I liked the decor in Arctis Tor.
Titania nodded. She said, You are unlike the other monsters she has shaped for herself over the centuries.
Thank you? She shook her head.
I have done nothing for you, Harry Dresden.
She pursed her lips.
In many ways, she and I are alike. In many more ways, we are entirely different. Do you know what my sister believes in?
Flashy entrances, I said.
Titania's lips actually twitched. In reason.
Reason?
Reason. Logic. Calculation. The cold numbers. The supremacy of the mind. Titania's eyes became distant. It is another place where we differ. I prefer to follow the wisdom of the heart.
Meaning what? I asked.
Titania lifted her hand and spoke a single word, and the air rang with power. The ground buckled, ripping my circle apart and flinging me from my feet onto my back. Meaning, she said, her voice hot and furious, that you murdered my daughter. Birds flew shrieking in every direction as if released from a centrifuge. Titania raised a hand, and a bolt of lightning fell from the tornadic sky and blew a smoking crater the size of my head in the ground a yard away. You dare to come here, to ask for me to interfere in my sister's business? You who gave my Aurora an iron death?
I tried to get up, only to have Titania grab the front of my jacket and lift me off the ground with one hand. She held me straight up over her head so that her fist was pressed against my chest.
I could kill you in 1,000 ways, she snarled, her opalescent eyes whirling with colors. I could scatter your bones to the far corners of the earth. I could feed you to my garden and make you scream the entire while. I could visit torments on you that would make Lloyd Slate's fate seem kind by comparison. I want to eat your heart.
I hung there over the furious queen of summer and knew for certain that there was not a damn thing I could do to save my own life. I can do things, sure, remarkable things. But Titania had no more to fear from me than a polar bear does a field mouse. My heartbeat became something close to a solid tone, and it was all I could do not to wet my freaking pants. And then something really unsettling happened. Tears filled her eyes. They came forth and spilled over her cheeks. Titania seemed to sag. She lowered me to the ground and released me.
I could do these things, but none of them, she whispered, would give me my daughter back. None of them would fill the emptiness within me. It took time, but Elder Gruff's wise counsel helped me to see that truth.
Hell's bells. Elder Gruff had spoken on my behalf. I owed that guy a beer.
I am not a fool, wizard. I know what she had become. I know what had to be done.
More tears fell, shining like diamonds.
But she was mine. I cannot forget that you took her from me. I cannot forgive you for that. Take your life and leave this place.
I sounded a little unsteady to my own ears when I spoke.
If the well is ruptured, your realm stands to lose as much as the mortal one does. The wisdom of my heart tells me to hate you, mortal, Titania said. Whatever my reason might say, I will not help you.
No?
What does your heart tell you is going to happen if those things in the well are set free? They're immortals. The fire in the failsafe might keep them down for a while, but they'll be back.
Titania didn't turn to face me. Her voice was weary.
My heart tells me that all things end. She paused. But this thing I will tell a winter knight who believes in freedom. You must learn greater discretion. The power you have come to know and fear has a name. One should know the proper names of things.
She turned and walked toward me. My body told me to run like hell, but I told her to shut up, that my legs were shaking too hard anyway. Titania leaned up onto her toes and whispered very close to my ear.
Nemesis, she breathed. Speak it carefully, or it may hear you.
I blinked. It what?
With that she turned and began walking away. Fare thee well, wizard. You say that people should be free. I agree. I will not shackle you with my wisdom. Make your choices. Choose what the world is to be. I care not. There is little light left in it for me, thanks to you.
A relatively small flock of birds, only a few hundred, blurred by between me and Titania. When they had passed, she was gone. I stood there, letting my heart rate slow down, along with the spinning clouds. I felt like crap. When I'd killed Aurora, there hadn't been much in the way of a choice, but I'd still taken someone's little girl away from her forever. I felt like a man in a rowboat with only one oar. No matter how hard I worked, I wasn't really getting anywhere. But at least I had a name now for the force the ladies had told me about. Nemesis. And it was aware. The rain that had been held back abruptly began to come down in a torrent, and I sourly suspected that Titania had made sure I was going to get drenched. She hadn't killed me, or at least not yet, but I knew she sure as hell didn't like me. Night was coming on fast, and when it got here, all hell was going to break loose, and that was a best-case scenario. I bowed my head, hunched my shoulders against the rain, and started out of the magic hedge. Chapter 31. I whistled down a cab and went to my next destination, Graceland Cemetery. The place was actually kind of busy, it being Halloween and all. Graceland is one of the great cemeteries of the nation, the Atlantic City of graveyards. It's filled with monuments to men and women who evidently had too much money to throw around while they were still alive. There are statues and mausoleums everywhere, made from granite and ornate marble, some of them in the style of ancient Greece, some obviously more influenced by ancient Egypt. There's one that's practically a full-size temple.
The actual taste of the various monuments ranges from incredible beauty to absolutely outrageous extravagance, with artists and tycoons and architects and inventors all lying silently together now. Walk in Graceland and you can find yourself lost in a maze of memories, a cloud of names that no one living could attach to a face anymore. I wondered, passing some of the older monuments, whether anyone ever visited them anymore. If you died in 1876, it would mean that your great-great, or even great-great-great-grandchildren were the ones living now. Did people visit the graves of those who had been gone that long? No. Not for any personal reason. But that was all right. Graves aren't for the dead. They're for the loved ones the dead leave behind them. Once those loved ones have gone, once all the lives that have touched the occupant of any given grave had ended, then the grave's purpose was fulfilled and ended. I suppose if you looked at it that way, one might as well decorate one's grave with an enormous statue or a giant temple. It gave people something to talk about, at least. Although, following that logic, I would need to have a roller coaster or maybe a tilt-a-whirl constructed over my own grave when I died. Then, even after my loved ones had moved on, people could keep having fun for years and years. Of course, I'd need a slightly larger plot. My grave was still open, a 6-foot pit in the ground. An old enemy had bought it for me as a form of murderous foreplay. That one hadn't fallen out the way she had expected it would. But apparently, whatever mechanism she used to secure the grave and to have it illegally left open was evidently still in place, because when I got there, I found it just as gaping and threatening as it had always been. A chill rolled up my spine as I read my headstone. It was a pretty thing, white marble with gold inlaid letters and a gold inlaid pentacle. Here lies Harry Dresden. He died doing the right thing. Well, I muttered, once, sure, but I guess I'll have to go best 2 out of 3. I looked around. I'd passed several groups that might have been Halloween haunted theme tours, and a gaggle of kids wearing expensive black clothing and grim makeup, smoking cigarettes and trying to look like they were wise to the world. A couple of older people seemed to be actually visiting graves, putting out fresh flowers. I paused thoughtfully over my own grave and waited until no one was looking. Then I hopped down into it. My feet splashed into an inch of water and another 6 inches of mud, courtesy of the drizzling rain. I crouched a little lower, just to be sure no one saw me, and got into my bag again. My hands were shaking too much to get the bag open on the first try. It wasn't the cold. It wasn't even standing at the bottom of my own grave. Hell, when I'd been a ghost, my own grave had been the most restful place in the whole world, and there was a certain amount of that reassurance that was still present. I still had no desire to get dead, don't get me wrong. The scary thing was imagining what would happen to all the people I cared about if I died in the next few minutes. If I was right, this next interview might get me everything I needed. If I wasn't, well, I could hope to wind up dead, I guess. But I had a bad feeling that wizards who pissed off people on this level didn't get anything that pleasant and gentle. I made my preparations quickly. Earth and water were all around, no problem there. I'd have to hope that what little air I had was right for the calling. Fire would have been an issue if I hadn't planned ahead. I needed to represent one other primal force, too. Something that would call to the exact being I had in mind. Death. If working the spell from your own grave on Hallow-freaking-ween wasn't deathy enough, I wasn't sure what would be. I stood on one foot, and with a gesture and a word, froze most of the water in the grave. I put my free foot down on the ice, and pulled my other foot out of the part I'd left as mostly slush. Then I froze that too. I didn't have any problems slipping on the ice, or rather, I did slip a little, but my body seemed to adjust to it as naturally as it would have to small stones turning underfoot on a gravel road. No big deal. Once the water was nice and solid, I got out my other props. A bottle of cooking oil,
a knife and matches. I took the knife and drew a short cut into the skin of my left hand, in the fleshy bit between my thumb and forefinger, over an old scar where I had been hurt at the bidding of a queen of fairy before. While that welled up and began to bleed, I reached up and slashed off a lock of my hair with the same knife. I took the lock and used the freshly shed blood as an adhesive to hold it together and dropped it onto the surface of the ice. More death, just in case. Then I poured a circle of oil around the hair and the blood and set it quickly alight with the matches. Fire and water hissed and spit, and wind moaned over the top of my grave. I braced my hands on either side of it, closed my eyes, and spoke the invocation I'd chosen, infusing my voice with my will. "Ancient crone harbinger," I began, then raised my voice louder. "Longest shadow, darkest dream, she of the endless hunger, the iron teeth, the merciless jaws." I poured more of my wind and my will into the words, and the inside of my grave rang with a sheer volume. "I am Harry Dresden, the winter knight, and I needs must speak with thee. Atropos, Skuld, Mother Winter, I summon thee." I released the pent-up power in my voice, and as it rang out, I could hear birds erupting up from where they sheltered all over the graveyard. There were shouts and cries of surprise, too, from the tourists or the gothlings or both. I ground my teeth and hoped that they wouldn't come looking my way. Getting killed by Mother Winter wouldn't be like being killed by Titania. That might at least have been huge and messy, not really a fight, but at least a proper slaughter. If Mother Winter showed up and wanted to kill me, I'd probably just fall into dust or something. Mother Winter was to Mab as Mab was to Maeve. Power an order of magnitude above the Winter Queen. I'd met with her once before, and she'd literally knitted up some of the most powerful magic I'd ever seen while carrying on a conversation. The echoes of my summoning bounced around the graveyard over my head a few times, and then, nothing. I sat there for a moment, waiting, while the burning oil hissed and sputtered on the ice. A running tendril of oil ran out to my blood and hair, and a tongue of flame followed a moment later. That part was fine by me. It wasn't like I wanted to leave a target that juicy lying around for someone to steal, anyway. I waited until the fire burned out entirely, and quiet settled over my grave again, but nothing happened. Damn it. I wasn't going to figure out what was really going on tonight by carefully sifting all the facts and analyzing how they all fit together. Not in the time I had left. My only real chance was to get to someone who knew and get them to talk. Granted, going to talk to Mother Winter was about half an inch shy of trying to call up Lucifer, or maybe death itself, if there was such a being, no one was really sure. But when you need information from witnesses and experts, the only way to get it is to talk to them. Maybe my summons hadn't been deathy enough, but I hadn't wanted to kill some poor animal just to get the old girl's attention. I might have to, though. There was just too much at stake to get squeamish. I shook my head, put my tools away, and then the ice just beneath my toes shattered, and a long, bony arm, covered in wrinkles and warts and spots and belonging to a body that would have been at least 20 feet tall, shot up and seized my head. Not my face, my entire head, like a softball, or maybe an apple. Stained black claws on the ends of the knobby fingers dug into me, piercing my skin, and I was abruptly jerked down into the freaking ice with so much power that for a second I was terrified my neck had snapped. I thought I would be broken for certain when I hit the ice, but instead I was drawn through it and down into the mud and through that, and then I was falling, screaming in sudden, instinctive, blind terror. Then I hit something hard and it hurt, even through the power of the mantle, and I let out a brief, croaking exhalation. I dangled there, stunned for a moment,
with those cold, cruel, pointed claws digging into my flesh. Distantly, I could hear a slow, limping step and feel my feet dragging across a surface. Then I was flung and spun twice on the horizontal, and I crashed into a wall. I bounced off it and landed on what felt like a dirt floor. I lay there, not able to inhale, barely able to move, and either I'd gone blind or I was in complete blackness. The nice part about having your bells rung like that is that mind-numbing horror sort of gets put onto a side burner for a bit. That was pretty much the only nice thing about it. When I finally managed to gasp in a little air, I used it to make a whimpering sound of pure pain. A voice came out of the darkness, a sound that was dusty and raspy and covered in spiders.
"Me," it said, drawing the word out. "You attempt to summon me."
"You have my sincerest apologies for the necessity," I said, or tried to say to Mother Winter. I think it just came out, "Ow."
"You think I am a servant to be whistled for?"
continued the voice. Hate and weariness and dark amusement were all mummified together in it.
"You think I am some petty spirit you can command?"
"Ow,"
I gasped.
"You dare to presume? You dare to speak such names to draw my attention?"
the voice said.
"I have a stew to make, and I will fill it with your arrogant mortal meat."
There was a sound in the pitch darkness, steel being drawn across stone. A few sparks went up, blinding in the darkness. They burned the outline of a massive, hunched form grasping a cleaver. Sparks danced every few seconds as Mother Winter slowly sharpened her implement. I was able to get my breathing under control and to fight past the pain. I said,
"Mother Winter, such a pleasure to meet with you again."
The next burst of sparks gleamed off of an iron surface. Teeth.
I need to speak to you.
"Speak then, manling," said Mother Winter. "You have a little time left."
The cleaver rasped across the sharpening stone again.
"Mab has ordered me to kill Maeve," I said.
"She is always doing foolish things," said Mother Winter.
"Maeve says that Mab's gone insane," I said. "Lily concurs."
There was a wheezing sound that might have been a cackle.
"Such a loving daughter."
I had to believe that I was going to get out of this somehow, so I pressed her.
"I need to know which of them is right," I said. "I need to know who I should turn my hand against to prevent a great tragedy."
"Tragedy,"
said Mother Winter in a purr that made me think of rasping scorpions.
"Pain, terror, sorrow. Why should I wish to prevent such a thing? It is sweeter than an infant's marrow."
"It is a good thing I am a fearless and intrepid wizardly type, or that last bit of sentence would have set my flesh to crawling hard enough to carry me across the dirt floor. I was kind of hosed anyway, so I took a chance. I crossed my fingers in the dark and said,
"Because Nemesis is behind it."
The cleaver's rasp abruptly stopped. The darkness and silence were, for a moment, absolute. My imagination treated me to an image of Mother Winter creeping silently toward me in the blackness, cleaver lifted, and I stifled an urge to burst into panicked screams.
"So,"
she whispered a moment later,
"you have finally come to see what has been before you all this time."
Yeah, I guess. I know there's something there now, at least.
"So very mortal of you. Learning only when it is too late."
Rasp. Sparks. "You aren't going to kill me," I said. "I'm as much your knight as Mab's." There was a low, quiet snort.
"You are no true knight of winter, manling. Once I have devoured your flesh and your mantle with it, I will bestow it upon someone worthier of the name. I should never have given it to Mab.
Wow. I hadn't thought of that kind of motivation. My guts got really watery. I tried to move my limbs and found them numbed and only partially functional. I started trying to get them to flip me over so that I could get my feet under me.
No?
I heard myself ask in a panicked, cracking voice.
And why is that exactly?
Mab, said Mother Winter in a tone of pure disgust, is too much the romantic.
Which pretty much tells you everything you need to know about Mother Winter right there.
She has spent too much time with mortals,
Mother Winter continued, withered lips peeled back from iron teeth as the sparks from her cleaver's edge leapt higher.
Mortals in their soft, controlled world. Mortals with nothing to do but fight one another, who have forgotten why they should fear the fangs and the claws, the cold and the dark.
And that's bad?
What value has life when it is so easily kept?
Mother Winter spat the last word.
Mab's weakness is evident. Look at her knight.
Her knight was currently trying to sit up, but his wrists and ankles were fastened to the floor by something cold, hard, and unseen. I tested them but couldn't feel any edges. The bonds couldn't have been metal, and they weren't ice. I didn't know how I knew that, but I was completely certain. Ice would have been no obstacle, but there was something familiar about it, something I had felt before, in Chichen Itza. Will. Mother Winter was holding me down by pure, stark will. The leaders of the Red Court had been ancient creatures with a similar power, but that had been a vague, smothering blanket that had made it impossible to move or act. A purely mental effort. This felt like something similar, but far more focused, more developed, as if thought had somehow crystallized into tangibility. My wrists and ankles wouldn't move because Mother Winter's will said that was how reality worked. It was like magic, but magic took a seed, a kernel of will, and built up a framework of other energies around that seed. It took intense practice and focus to make that happen, but at the end of the day, anyone's will was only part of the spell, alloyed with other energy into something else. What held me down now was pure, undiluted will, the same kind of will that I suspected had backed up events presaged by phrases like, "Let there be light." It was far more than human, beyond simple physical strength. And if I'd been the Incredible Hulk, I was pretty sure there was no way I'd have been able to tear myself free.
Ah, said Mother Winter during one last stroke of the cleaver. I like nice, clean edges to my meat, manling. Time for dinner.
And slow, limping steps came toward me. Chapter 32. A slow smile stretched my lips back from my teeth. Mortals had the short end of the stick on almost any supernatural confrontation. Even most wizards, with their access to terrific forces, had to approach conflicts carefully. Relatively few of us had the talents that lent themselves to brawling. But one thing mortals had everyone else beat on was exactly one thing. The freedom to choose. Free will. It had taken me a while to begin to understand it, but it had eventually sunk into my thick skull. I couldn't arm wrestle an ogre, even with the mantle. I couldn't have won a magical duel with Mab or Titania, probably not even against Maeve or Lily. I couldn't outrun one of the she. But I could defy absolutely anyone. I could lift my will against that of anything, and know that the fight might be lopsided, but never hopeless. And by thunder, I was not going to allow anyone's will to stretch me out on the floor like a lamb for slaughter.
I stopped pressing at my bindings with my limbs and started using my mind instead. I didn't try to push them away or break them or slip free of them. I simply willed them not to be. I envisioned what my limbs would feel like coming free and focused on that reality, summoning up my total concentration on that goal, that ideal, that fact. And then I crossed my fingers and reached into me, into the place where a covert archangel had granted me access to one of the primal forces of the universe, an energy called soul fire. I had no idea how it might interact with the Winter Night's mantle on an ongoing basis. I mean, it had worked out once before, but that didn't mean that it would keep working out. I felt certain that I was pretty much swallowing bottles of nitroglycerin, then jumping up and down to see what would happen. But at this point, I had little to lose. I gathered up soul fire, used it to infuse my raw will, and cast the resulting compound against my bonds. Soul fire, according to Bob, is one of the fundamental forces of the universe, the original power of creation. It isn't meant for mortals. We get it by slicing off a bit of our soul, our life energy, and converting it into something else. Bob is brilliant, but there are some things that he just doesn't get. His definition was a good place to get started, but it was also something that was perhaps too comfortably quantifiable. The soul isn't something you can weigh and measure. It's more than just one thing. Because soul fire interacts with souls in a way that I'm not sure anyone understands, it stands to reason that soul fire isn't just one thing either. And in this case, in this moment, I somehow knew exactly what the soul fire did. It converted me, my core, everything that made me who I was, into energy, into light. When I turned my joined will and the blazing core of my being together, I wasn't supercharging a magical spell. I wasn't cleverly finding a weak point in an enchantment. I wasn't using my knowledge of magic to exploit what my enemy was doing. I was casting everything I had done, everything I believed, everything I had chosen, everything I was, against the will of an ancient being of darkness, terror, and malice, a fundamental power of the world. And the bonds and the will of Mother Winter could not constrain me. There was a sharp, shimmering tone, like metal under stress and beginning to fail, but more musical, and a blinding white light that washed away the darkness and dazzled my eyes. There was a thunder crack, and a terrible force erupted from my wrists and ankles, throwing a shockwave of raw kinetic energy, a mere shadow of the true forces at work, a byproduct, out into the space around me. In that whiteness, I caught an image of a shrouded, hunched, dark form, flung from her feet to impact something solid. And then I was free and hauling myself up onto my feet. I backed up, hoping I hadn't gotten turned around in the flash, and a surge of relief went through me when my back hit a stone wall. I felt out along on either side of me, and my hand brushed something solid, maybe a small shelf made from a wooden plank. I knocked it off its peg. It fell to the dirt floor with a clatter and a clink of small, heavy glass jars. I leaned against the wall, dazed, panting, and gasped in my deepest and most gravelly voice,
"No one can chain the Hawk!"
I heard a stir of cloth in the darkness then, a slight grunt of effort, the faintest whistle in the air. I can't claim credit for being smart or cool on this one. Some instinct pegged which way the cleaver was coming, and I flung my head sharply to one side. Sparks flew as the cleaver struck the wall where my skull had been and sank into it as if it had been made of rotten pine, not stone. It stayed there, making a faint vibrating sound as it quivered. "I have got to learn to keep my freaking mouth shut." I clenched my teeth together and stayed still, giving no indication of where I might be in the darkness. For a long time there was quiet, except for the breathing I fought to slow in silence. And then a horrible slithering sound went through the blackness. It caught in Mother Winter's ancient throat, clicking like the shells of swarming carrion beetles. It wormed its way through the air like a swarm of maggots burrowing through rotten meat. It brushed against me, light and hideous, like the touch of a vulture's lice-infested feather, and I struggled to press myself back a little closer to the stone at the sound of it. Mother Winter was cackling.
"So," she said, "so, so, and so. Perhaps thou art not entirely useless after all, eh, manling?"
For all I knew, Mother Winter had a whole cutlery set over there. I gathered my will into a shielding spell, but I didn't release it. Magic was like air and water to the Fae. I had a feeling Mother Winter would have been able to home in on it. "That was a test," I whispered, behind my hand, so that it might not make it utterly obvious where I was standing.
"Or a meal," she rasped. "Either would suffice."
And then brightness flooded the room. I thought some massive force had inundated the area I stood in, but after a second I realized that it was a door. The light was sunlight, with the golden quality that somehow felt like autumn. I had to shield my eyes against it, but after a moment I realized that I was standing in a small, simple, medieval-looking cottage, one in which I had been before. Everything in it was wooden, leather, clay, and handmade. The glass in the windows was wavery and translucent. It was a neat, tidy place, apart from one corner with a large, ugly, raw-looking rocking chair. Oh, and a spilled shelf of small clay pots with wax-sealed mouths.
"You can be so overly dramatic betimes," complained an old woman's voice, as gentle and sweet as Mother Winter's was unpleasant.
She came into the house a moment later, a grandmotherly matron dressed in a simple dress with a green apron. Her long hair, silver-white and thinning, was done up in a small, neat bun. She moved with a slightly stiff, bustling energy of an active senior, and if her green eyes were framed by crow's feet, they were bright and sharp. Mother Summer carried a basket in one arm, filled with cuttings from what must have been a late-season herb garden, and as I watched, she entered, muttered a word, and a dozen tiny whirlwinds cleaned thick layers of soot from the many paned windows scattered around the cottage, flooding it with more warm light.
"We'll need a new cleaver now."
Mother Winter, in her black shawl and hood, bared her iron teeth in a snarl, though it was a silent one. She pointed one crooked, warty finger at the window nearest her and blackened it with soot again. Then she shuffled over to a chair beneath the window and settled into the resulting shadow as if it were a comforting blanket.
"I do what must be done."
"With our cleaver,"
Mother Summer said.
"I suppose one of our knives wouldn't have done just as well."
Mother Winter bared her teeth again.
"I wasn't holding a knife."
Mother Summer made a disapproving clucking sound and began unloading her basket onto a wooden table near the fireplace.
"I told you,"
she said calmly. Mother Winter made a sour-sounding noise and pointed a finger. A large mug decorated with delicately painted flowers fell from a shelf. Mother Summer calmly put out a hand, caught it, and returned it to the shelf.
Mother Summer," I said after a moment of silence. "I apologize for intruding into your home."
"Oh dear, that's very sweet,"
Mother Summer said.
"But you owe me no apology. You were brought here entirely against your will, after all."
She paused for a beat and added,
"Rudely."
Mother Winter made another displeased sound. I looked back and forth between them. Centuries of dysfunction in this family, Harry. Walk carefully.
I think I'd prefer to think of it as a very firm invitation.
"Ha!"
said Mother Winter from her hood. Her teeth gleamed.
"The knight knows his loyalties, at least."
Mother Summer somehow managed to inject her voice with profound skepticism.
"I'm sure he's overjoyed to owe loyalty to you," she said. "Why did you bring him here now, of all times?"
More teeth showed.
"He summoned me, the precious thing."
Mother Summer dropped her herbs.
She turned her head toward me, her eyes wide.
Oh, she said. Oh, dear.
Mother Winter's rocker creaked, though it didn't really seem to move.
He knew certain names. He was not wholly stupid in choosing them, or wholly wrong in using them.
Mother Summer's bright eyes narrowed.
Did he?
No, croaked Mother Winter. Not that one. But he has seen the adversary and learned one of its names.
Calculation and thought flickered through those green eyes faster than I could follow.
Ah, yes, I see, Mother Summer said. So many new futures unwinding.
Too many bright ones,
Mother Winter said sullenly.
Even you must think better that than empty night.
Mother Winter spit to one side. It started eating a hole in the dirt floor a few inches from one of my feet. I'm not kidding. I took a small sidestep away and tried not to breathe the fumes.
I think, Mother Winter said, that he should be shown.
Mother Summer narrowed her eyes.
Is he ready?
There's no time to coddle him, she rasped. He is a weapon. Let him be made stronger.
Or broken,
Mother Summer asked.
Time, time, Winter breathed. He is not your weapon.
It is not your world,
Summer countered. Excuse me, I said quietly. Green eyes and black hood turned toward me. I don't want to be rude, ma'am, I said. I picked up the fallen wooden shelf from where I'd knocked it down and put it back on its pegs. Then I bent and started putting the sealed jars back onto the shelf. I'm still young. I make mistakes. But I'm not a child, and I'm not letting anyone but me choose which roads I'll walk. That made Mother Winter cackle again.
Precious little duck,
she wheezed.
He means it.
Indeed,
Mother Summer said, but her tone was thoughtful as she watched me restore the fallen shelf to order. I kept on replacing jars, lining them up neatly, and spoke as gently and politely as I knew how. You can take my body and run it like a puppet. You can kill me. You can curse me and torture me and turn me into an animal.
Can,
said Mother Winter.
And might, if you maintain this impertinence.
I swallowed and continued. You can destroy me, but you can't make me be anything but what I choose to be, ma'am. I don't know exactly what you both are talking about showing me, ma'am. But you aren't going to shove it down my throat or put it up on a shelf out of my reach, either one. I decide for myself, or I walk out the door.
Oh, will you?
Said Mother Winter in a low, deadly whisper. Her overlong nails scraped at the wood on her chair's arms.
Is that what you think, my lamb?
Mother Summer arched an eyebrow and eyed Mother Winter.
You test his defiance against his very life. And yet when he passes, you are surprised he does not leap to do your bidding.
She made another disapproving clucking sound.
He is brave, and he is courteous. I will show him what you ask, if he is willing.
Winter bared her teeth and spit again into the same hole, and more earth hissed and melted away. She started rocking back and forth, slowly, and turned her gaze away. I picked up the last fallen pot and was about to put it away when I frowned. Oh, I'm sorry, but there's a crack in this one. I never heard or saw any movement, but suddenly Mother Summer was there beside me, and her bony, capable hands were wrapping warmly around mine. Her touch was like Lily's, but gentler and more vast. It made me think of miles and miles of prairie, soaking up the summer sun's heat, storing it through the day, only to give it back to the air in the long hours of twilight. As gently as if handling a newborn, she took the little clay pot from me and turned it slowly in her fingers, examining it. Then she exhaled slowly, closed her eyes for a moment, and then put it reverently back onto the shelf. When she took her hands from the little pot, I saw letters written in silvery light upon it, and upon neighboring pots, as if the letters had been awakened by the warmth of her hands. The writing on the cracked pot said simply, Wormwood. The letters began to fade, but I saw some of the others. Typhos, Pox, Attermores, Choleros, Malaros, Typhus, Smallpox, the Black Death, Cholera, Malaria, and Wormwood. And there were lots of other jars on the shelf. My hands started shaking a little.
It is not yet the appointed time for that one to be born,
Mother Summer said quietly, and her hard eyes flicked toward Mother Winter. She didn't look back toward us, but her teeth gleamed from within her hood. Mother Summer slipped her hand through my arm. I gave it to her more or less out of reflex and walked across the cottage. She picked up her basket and then we went to the door. I opened it for her and offered her my arm again, and we walked together out of the cottage and into a modest clearing surrounded by ancient forest with trees the size of redwoods. They blazed with the colors of fall, their leaves carpeting the forest floor in glorious fire as far as the eye could see. It was gorgeous, but it wasn't anywhere on earth.
I think she likes you, young man.
Yes, ma'am, I said. I could tell, because of the cleaver.
It is her way,
Mother Summer said, smiling.
She rarely leaves our cottage any more. She lost her walking stick. While your summons was impertinent, it was a necessity, and you had the right. But it is terribly painful for her to travel, even briefly. You, a mortal, hurt her.
Mother Summer's words made the whole chopped-up-for-stew-meat situation more understandable. Beings like Mother Winter tormented mortals, not the other way around. I'd injured her pride along with the rest of her, and in the supernatural world such insults were rarely forgiven and never forgotten. She was balancing the scales, I said quietly. Is that what you mean? Mother Summer nodded approval.
You phrase it simply, but not incorrectly.
She stopped and turned to look up at me.
She cannot take you to the places we must walk if you are to understand.
Understand what? I asked. Her green eyes reflected the colors of the autumn forest.
What is at stake?
She said.
If you choose to walk with me, what is seen cannot be unseen, and what is known cannot be unknown. It may harm you.
Harm me how? I asked.
You may never know a night's peace again. Knowledge is power, young man. Power to do good and power to do harm. Some knowledge can hurt. Some can kill.
What happens if I don't have it? Mother Summer smiled, a gentle sadness in her eyes.
You keep the bliss of ignorance, and consign our fates to fickle chance. Do not choose lightly.
I pondered it for like 10 whole seconds. I mean, come on. I'm a freaking wizard, people. It's better to know than not know, I said quietly.
Why?
Mother Summer challenged. Because you can't truly make a choice without knowledge, ma'am.
Even if it may haunt you, harm you, isolate you.
I thought about it some more and then said, Especially then, show me. An emotion flickered across Mother Summer's face, gentle pain and regret.
So be it, she said quietly. Come with me.
Chapter 33 I walked into the ancient forest with Mother Summer on my arm, following a wide, meandering footpath.
Do you mind if I ask you a question while we walk?
Mother Summer asked. Not at all, ma'am, I said.
What do you suppose will happen to you if you do not heed Mab's command?
Command? I asked.
Don't be coy, child.
Mother Summer sniffed.
What my counterpart knows, I know. Mab commanded you to slay Maeve. What do you think will happen if you disobey her?
I walked for a while before I answered. It depends on whether or not Mab's still around when the smoke clears, I guess, I said. If she is, she'll be upset. I'll wind up like Lloyd Slate. If she isn't...
Yes?
Maeve assumes Mab's mantle and becomes the new Winter Queen.
Exactly,
Mother Summer said.
In time, the difference will hardly show. But in the immediate future, how do you think Maeve will treat you?
I opened my mouth and closed it again. I could imagine that vividly enough. Maeve, high as a kite on her newfound power, giggling and tormenting and killing left and right just because she could do it. Maeve was the sort who lived to pull the wings off of flies. And I was pretty sure whose wings would be the first to catch her eye. Well, crap, I said.
Quite so,
said Mother Summer.
And if you do heed Mab's command?
Maeve's mantle gets passed on to someone else, I said. And if the adversary... Can I say that safely? Mother Summer smiled.
That's why we use that word rather than a name, Sir Knight, yes.
If the adversary has taken Mab, I said, then it gets to choose an agent to take the Winter Lady's mantle. 2/3 of the Winter Court will be under its influence. I looked back toward the cottage. And that seems like it might be bad for Mother Winter.
Indeed,
said Mother Summer.
We are all vulnerable to those who are close to us.
I never figured Granny Cleaver was close to anyone, ma'am. The lines at the corners of Mother Summer's eyes deepened.
Oh, she... What is the phrase? She talks a good game, but in her own way she cares.
I may have arched a skeptical eyebrow. Kind of like how, in her own way, she likes me, I asked. Mother Summer didn't answer that, as our steps carried us into a more deeply shadowed section of the forest.
It is at times very difficult to be so closely interwoven with mortals, she said.
For you?
For all of Faerie,
she replied. What do you mean? She gestured at herself.
We appear much as humans, do we not? Most of our folk do, or else they resemble another creature of the mortal world. Hounds, birds, stags, and so forth.
Sure, I said.
You are endlessly fascinating. We conceive our children with mortals. We move and sway in time to the mortal seasons. We dance to mortal music, make our homes like mortal dwellings, feast upon mortal foods. We find parts of ourselves becoming more like them, and yet we are not like them. Many of the things they think and feel, and a great many of their actions, are inexplicable to us.
We don't really understand ourselves all that well yet, I said. I think it would be very difficult for you to do it. Mother Summer smiled at me, and it felt like the first warm day of spring.
That's true, isn't it?
But you've got a point to make, ma'am, I said, or you wouldn't have brought up the subject.
I do,
she said.
Winter is cold, Sir Knight, but never so cold that it freezes the heart altogether.
You've got to have a heart before it can freeze, ma'am.
You do.
I walked for a little while considering that. You're saying that I have a chance to stay me.
I'm saying many things,
Mother Summer said.
Do you have a chance to remain yourself, despite the tendency of the mantle to mold your thoughts and desires? All knights, winter and summer, have that chance. Most fail.
But it's possible, I said. She looked up at me, and her eyes were deeper than time.
Anything is possible.
Ah, I said, understanding. We're not really talking about me.
We are,
she said serenely, turning her eyes away.
And we are not.
I said, I'm getting a little confused here. What are we talking about exactly? Mother Summer smiled at me, and then she just clammed up. We are? We're not? I kept a straight face while my inner Neanderthal spluttered and then went on a mental rampage through a hypothetical produce section, knocking over shelves and splattering fruit everywhere in sheer frustration, screaming, "Just tell me who skulled a crack with my club, damn it!" Flippin' fairies. They will be the death of me. In the spirit of